Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 26th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Immigrants waiting for asylum rulings, living in homeless-style encampment in Western Washington, statewide hand count in Washington's lands commissioner race, Washington Fish and Wildlife sets rules for hunters after first case of chronic wasting disease found in a deer north of Spokane, and Idaho legislative candidates endorse gay and trans rights at Palouse Pride over the weekend. We'll get details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Tennessee has followed Idaho's lead in enacting a law that makes it a felony to help a pregnant teen cross state lines to get a legal abortion without parental permission. A judge has put Idaho's law on hold, but Tennessee's law is now in effect, although abortion rights advocates have filed a lawsuit against it. Republican legislators in Alabama, Mississippi, and Oklahoma have introduced what are called abortion trafficking laws, although they did not advance during the most recent legislative sessions, which ended earlier this year. Republican State Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls, who has stated one of her main priorities is parental rights to control what their offspring do, has called her law an abortion trafficking law. Ehart told State's newsroom, "We can't control someone getting an abortion in Oregon, but you cannot take a child to get an abortion without the parent's knowledge because, at least in the past, we would have called that kidnapping." Idaho's law defines abortion trafficking as recruiting, harboring, or transporting a pregnant minor to get an abortion without parental permission. The law raises questions about the fate of victims of incest and domestic abuse who need abortion care. It also raises questions about free speech. University of California at Davis School of Law legal historian and law professor Mary Ziegler told State's newsroom, "If courts go down this road, it could change the scope of the First Amendment. It could have an effect on what else qualifies as crime-facilitating speech, and that could limit the kinds of things people can say and do online and in other contexts." Ziegler said such laws, if upheld, could allow prosecutors to project power across state lines. She said, "We haven't seen states try to interfere in what's happening in other states in quite the same way in a long time. That's why there is legal uncertainty, because we're not talking about something where we have a lot of legal precedent." A court in Tennessee has scheduled a hearing on a motion to grant a temporary injunction blocking the Tennessee law for Friday this week. Nearly 200 asylum seekers are living in a homeless-style camp in Kent, Washington, with little outside support as they wait for the state to organize a response to immigrants who are waiting determinations on their requests for political asylum. The Seattle Times reports many in the camp are from Angola, Congo, or Venezuela. The state of Washington released $30 million in state funding for a centralized response to the growing number of asylum seekers, but the state has not opened a shelter yet. King County moved 170 people out of the encampment and into temporary housing in July, but there are still about 200 people there. People there cook on a few propane stoves and shower with three cold water garden hoses in a muddy pit. The Seattle Times reports there are more than a dozen children and babies in the camp and at least two pregnant women. Camp residents say they have had to kill numerous snakes and people are continuing to get sick. Camp resident Paulin Kuhambu, who lives in the camp with his four daughters and pregnant wife, said, "We're here at this encampment and there's a lot of people suffering." The camp started after the Riverton Park United Methodist Church in Tukwila helped more than 2,000 immigrants during the past 2 years, but started turning away new arrivals, who then headed further south to Kent. King County officials say they have run out of funding and camp residents will have to wait until the state's coordinated program starts next month. Washington Office of Refugee and Immigrant Assistance Director Sarah Peterson told the paper there won't be enough funding to help every migrant get temporary housing or support even when the state system gets running. Washington Secretary of State Steve Hobbs has ordered county auditors in every county to count ballots in the lands commissioner primary race by hand. Whitman County Auditor Sandy Jameson issued a press release Friday saying election workers will be recounting the ballots until the Whitman County Canvassing Board certifies the election on Wednesday, September 3rd. The race between the second and third place finishers in the top two primary shows Democrat Dave Upthegrove is leading Republican Sue Kuehl Peterson by 51 votes, which is narrower than the 2004 governor's race in which Democrat Christine Gregoire won by 133 votes over Republican Dino Rossi. That 2004 race included two recounts and a court fight. Republican and former U.S. Representative Jamie Herrera Butler is leading the seven-way primary race for state lands commissioner with 22% of the vote and will advance to the general election in November. Butler was one of about a dozen Republicans in the U.S. House to vote to impeach Donald Trump in 2021, making her a target, who got eliminated in the 2022 primary when she ran for re-election for a seventh term from the 3rd Congressional District in Washington. Democrat Marie Glusenkamp-Perez of Vancouver now represents the 3rd District after defeating election denier Joe Kent in the general election that year. Under Washington law, the state will order a hand recount if the difference between two contending candidates is less than 1,000 votes and under 0.25%. The Secretary of State's office is scheduled to certify the statewide results of the August 6th primary on Thursday, September 4th. The Washington Fish and Wildlife Department announced temporary emergency rules for hunters Friday for three hunting districts near Spokane in response to the report of the first case of chronic wasting disease in the state. The department announced August 1st they tested a deer found dead in the Fairwood area north of Spokane, and it came up positive for chronic wasting disease, which is always fatal in deer, elk, and moose. The spokesman review reports the Washington Animal Disease Diagnostic Lab in Pullman found the disease in the sample in July, although the deer was found dead in February. Chronic wasting disease is now found in 35 states and 5 Canadian provinces. It is caused by misfolded proteins called prions that infect animals and can spread across the landscape. The disease is always fatal. The new rules require hunters submit samples of any deer or elk they kill or salvage in game management units 124, 127, and 130, which are within 10 miles of where the infected deer was found. The samples will help wildlife biologists determine if the disease is spreading. The rules also prohibit moving dead animal parts from most of eastern Washington to other parts of the state, except in the case of deboned meat. The rules also prohibit the use of bait to attract deer and elk, which makes it less likely the animals will congregate close together, which could cause the disease to spread. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife press release says the agency will propose permanent rules for hunters in response to the chronic wasting disease case. Those rules will go to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, who will make a decision. Chronic wasting disease is not known to affect humans, although wildlife officials discourage people from eating meat from infected animals just in case. The Department of Energy has announced workers stabilized the fuel basin of the last of 9 nuclear reactors on the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in the last week. The reactor fuel basins contain radioactive waste from the Cold War production of plutonium used in nuclear weapons, including the Fat Man nuclear bomb the U.S. military dropped on Nagasaki, Japan in 1945. According to the Spokesman Review, Department of Energy spokesperson Cerise Peck said the purpose of the stabilization effort was to prevent radioactive contamination from reaching the Columbia River. Peck said the K-Basin was a key project in our key reduction portion of our mission, and filling that with grout and removing the water was great progress for us. Democratic State Representative Jerry Pollitt of Seattle, who founded the nuclear watchdog group Heart of America Northwest more than 20 years ago, said the stabilization work should have been completed years ago. Pollitt told the paper, "For 25 years, this has been identified as a huge priority. It was supposed to have the waste removed from the basin to end the risk of a catastrophe and protect the Columbia River. It was supposed to happen 20 years ago." The Washington Supreme Court has disbarred former state treasurer Troy Kelly. A federal court convicted Kelly in 2017 of fraud-related charges stemming from business dealings before Washington voters elected him state treasurer in 2012. Legal authorities suspended Kelly from practicing law in 2018, but Kelly appealed the suspension to the state Supreme Court. After federal prosecutors indicted the Democratic treasurer in 2015, he took an extended leave of absence from his job and did not run for re-election in 2016. Prosecutors found Kelly's business, called Post Closing, collected $120 to $140 from each of tens of thousands of escrow customers to perform $10 to $20 for services in each case, with the rest of the money to be used for county and recording fees. Kelly's business was supposed to refund the unused portion of the money, but it did not. The Seattle Times reports Kelly was convicted of 9 federal felonies in 2017, including possession and concealing of stolen property and filing false income tax returns. A court eventually overturned one of the 9 convictions. In related news, former Washington State Treasurer Jim McIntyre has died from prostate cancer at the age of 71. McIntyre died at his home in Seattle August 16th. He served as treasurer from 2019 to 2017 during the state's financial crisis, in which a number of banks failed. The Seattle Times reports during his time as treasurer, McIntyre and his team rewrote the state's public banking laws and got the legislature to pass them. The rewrites made sure bank deposits were fully insured. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
A grant from the federal government is helping improve transportation planning options in the Puget Sound region. The nonprofit HopeLink has received a $519,000 Innovative Coordinated Access and Mobility Project grant, a program created through the bipartisan infrastructure law passed in 2021. Director of Mobility Management for HopeLink, Stacy Sahu, says the funds will support the second phase in the development of its online tool, the Find a Ride Trip Planner. She says different transportation resources each have their own avenues for signing up.
What this funds are, and we're so excited for, is to make it as seamless as we possibly can with all the systems diverging. How do we bring it all into one tool so that somebody just has to apply, just has to sign up one time?
Sahu says the ultimate goal of the Find a Trip Planner tool is to create a seamless process for the booking and payment of transportation. Many people have to work across different apps and tools to do that currently. The planner provides transportation options across King, Pierce, and Snohomish counties. Sahu says finding transportation can be hard, especially for people who may have mobility issues. However, this tool could help them identify resources for transportation.
An individual who uses a mobility device, a person who identifies as low vision or blind, they're likely eligible for a lot more services than they realize. And that's what we're trying to help connect them with.
Sahu says the tool has also helped to identify gaps in transportation services. For example, Snoqualmie Valley recently launched service on the weekend.
Our first priority is the end user, the person who will be using the tool, but we've already seen benefits on actually increasing services because we're able to more easily see what's lacking.
The Find a Ride Trip Planner was among 17 projects selected to receive an Innovative Coordinated Access and Mobility Project grant. The Federal Transit Administration distributed a combined $7.8 million to these projects. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.
AARP Idaho is hosting a town hall on Thursday on Social Security and the issues that might impact its future. Without a change, Social Security benefits could be cut to 80% of what they pay out currently in a decade. That's because the number of workers paying into the program is growing more slowly than the number of people receiving benefits.
We're still in the big baby boom surge of people retiring and going on Social Security. So this isn't going to lighten up anytime soon.
About 370,000 Idahoans receive Social Security benefits, close to a fifth of the state's population. Simler says the benefit is the largest source of income for most of the people who receive them, and beneficiaries also help put more than $6 billion back into the economy each year. The town hall can be streamed on AARP Idaho's Facebook page or heard over the phone at 866-767-0637 at noon on Thursday. Simler says it's important for policymakers and leaders in Congress to remember that Social Security is funded by workers themselves.
They need to consider that. For many Idahoans, this is their primary income. People paid into this. It's their money. It's not an entitlement. It's not a benefit. It's their money.
Simler says some solutions have been proposed, such as raising the wage cap for paying into Social Security, increasing the tax that pays for it, and raising the retirement age. She says what's most important is that people are involved in any changes.
We're pushing that there'll be transparency in this process, and in particular, we want the public to have an opportunity to give input because this matters to people. This could really hurt people, so the people in Idaho need to have their voice raised as the solutions are being discussed.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The far-right contingent of the Idaho legislature has been successful in passing anti-gay and anti-trans legislation in the last few years. The library bill that went into effect July 1st was pushed by people who don't want minors to access reading material that affirms their sexual orientation or gender identity, which may reduce suicide among gay and trans youth. In 2023, it was a law allowing people to sue a school district for $5,000 if they encounter a person using sex-segregated facilities consistent with their gender identity. This year, Governor Little signed a law banning gender-affirming care for minors with a maximum of 10 years in prison. That law is not in effect due to a court challenge, although another law banning the use of Medicaid funds for necessary gender-affirming care for adults is in effect. So it's notable that two Democrats who are running for seats in the Idaho legislature from District 6 spoke to the 2024 Palouse Pride event in East City Park Saturday. Julia Parker of Moscow is running for the District 6 Senate seat, and Kathy Dawes of Moscow is running for House Seat 6B. Both of their opponents, incumbent Republican Senator Dan Foreman of Moscow and incumbent Republican Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow, have voted for anti-gay and anti-trans legislation in the state legislature. Here's Julia Parker speaking to Palouse Pride in the Park, followed by Kathy Dawes.
Friends, to my family and my loved ones in the queer community, I want to say to you that I see you. I see your beautiful faces here today. I hear your strong voices. And I believe that the queer community has to be treated with dignity and respect.
Yeah.
With your help, I am going to be Idaho's next state senator.
Yeah.
To my future colleagues in the Idaho legislature, I say, for the love of all that is holy, leave people alone.
Yeah.
Your right-wing Christian nationalist agenda does not belong in my bedroom. It does not belong in our classrooms, and it certainly does not belong in our exam rooms. Amen.
I want to say that it's my feeling that the animosity, the hatred, the discrimination that is coming out of our Idaho legislature right now is due to fear. Fear of the unknown. They do not know you, do they? I'm going to tell you a story right now. A very close family member of mine hated LGBTQ plus people. Absolutely hated them. She could not understand them. She didn't know why they even existed until she realized that her favorite cousin was gay and her favorite aunt was a lesbian. Once she saw that, her eyes were opened and she said, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe what I believed before now, knowing what I know." So those are the kinds of stories we need to tell. When you confront anyone who is opposed to LGBTQ plus people, talk to them. Talk to them and listen to their concerns. That's the first step, listen. Acknowledge those concerns. Oh, I do understand why you feel that way. You probably haven't ever met anyone like me before. So listen, then acknowledge, and the third step is ask their permission to tell your story to them.
That was Democrat Kathy Dawes running for Idaho House Seat 6B, speaking to Palouse Pride Saturday in East City Park. Before her, you heard from State Senate candidate Julia Parker, also a Democrat. Moscow Mayor Art Bedke pointed out the city has good policies that protect gay people, but the state legislature is passing more and more laws that discriminate against gay people.
Moscow is a good place to be. We have a strong non-discrimination ordinance that I have to read this because there's a lot. It protects sexual orientation and or gender expression and identity and affords opportunities, equal opportunities for employment and housing, commercial property, and the use of public accommodations. This is great. We're one of the few municipalities in the state that feature this non-discrimination clause, and we mean it. So however, we live in a state where the legislature and certain other local groups would like to impose their vision of morality on the rest of the people of the state. And that's why, partly, we're here today, is to think about that. All those rights that we enjoy, including that non-discrimination ordinance, can also be reversed just as easily or more easily than they went in. So keep in mind that our task to prevent that from happening, to keep everyone available, to have all the equal rights that everyone else does, is to vote. People need to get out and vote. Otherwise, if you don't, you're abrogating your responsibility. You're turning over your life to somebody else to decide how you should be living.
That was Moscow Mayor Art Bedke speaking at Palouse Pride in the Park, a celebration that was held Saturday. Nick Koenig of Moscow was one of 27 Idaho delegates at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago last week. The main thrust of Koenig's political organizing is climate catastrophe. All 27 Idaho delegates cast their ballots for Kamala Harris. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox caught up with Koenig at Saturday's Palouse Pride and asked about the atmosphere at the convention.
I was elected as an Idaho delegate for Congressional District 1. So I was one of the 27 delegates that Idaho has. So overall, it was just a very overwhelming experience in both a really extremely good way as well as a kind of maybe sometimes a disappointing way. I learned a lot as an activist, as an organizer, but I also got to see kind of on the inside of how the sausage is made, for maybe the lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, tell me about that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so It was a very choreographed event, right? So, and it makes sense, right? This is the public-facing, outward-facing event. So it makes sense why they were trying to rally up a bunch of enthusiasm around the election, which the event totally did. But there were some aspects in terms of dissent that they weren't too open about. They didn't want people to really have too much dissent, which I was a bit disappointed in. But overall, like, it was really exciting to see, especially when we compare Joe Biden to Kamala Harris. The candidates are just, like, some of the most widely stretched. Yep.
That was Democratic National Convention delegate Nick Koenig of Moscow. Koenig also spoke about the attendance at Palouse Pride.
Last year, we maybe had like 1,200 or 1,500 come through throughout the day. And I wouldn't be surprised if today reaches that number as well with the weather. And it's just so nice to see all the folks that support queer community in Moscow out here and just showing their presence. Yeah.
Because we have to here.
Yeah, we have to.
Considering.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we saw in the last legislative session, even though we have a Democratic president, we have a very Republican state. So it's really just reiterates the point of trying to show up for those local elections so that we can push the Idaho Congress from a supermajority Republican to maybe just get to a Republican majority rather than supermajority, which could have really big impacts in terms of trans health care or pronoun bills or what have you that the kind of legislative is trying to attack in terms of the queer trans community.
Right.
That was Nick Koenig, who was a delegate to the Democratic National Convention last week. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox spoke to Koenig at Palouse Pride in East City Park Saturday. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear tonight, low 52. Tomorrow, 20% chance of precipitation, a slight chance of showers after 8 a.m., otherwise partly sunny, high 70. Breezy, west winds 5 to 10, increasing to 15 to 20 in the afternoon, gusts up to 35. Mostly clear Tuesday night, low 38, breezy, west winds 15 to 20, decreasing to 5 to 10 after midnight, gusts up to 30. And mostly clear Wednesday through Friday, with highs 67 Wednesday, 79 Thursday, and 86 on Friday, lows 41 Wednesday night and 47 Thursday night. Currently 77 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. There's a Patreon button. There's a PayPal option. And you can adopt a DJ. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is up next. That'll be followed at 7:30 with music featuring Spotlight with Bex on the air. And at 9:30, we'll have Chia Pet playing music for you, or at 9 till 11 p.m. tonight here on KRFP. Syndicated world music with the Motherland Influence, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Entertainment, information, and music throughout your evening. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by C.F. Morrison Guitars at 130 North Grand Avenue in Pullman, providing lessons, repairs, and handmade acoustic and classical guitars. Open Wednesday and Saturday afternoons. Details at cfmorrisonguitars.com. KRFP thanks its donors and sponsors.